the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, you're very welcome back. It is The Last Word. It is Will O'Callaghan sitting in for Matt Cooper on this Thursday afternoon. And I'm delighted to say this host of EcoEye, Anya Murray, is here with me. Anya, how are you getting on? Are you well?
Delighted to be here, Will. Yeah.
We're going to have a chat about your new book. So this book is called Frog Roots, Polka Dot Newts and Other Treasures of Irish Nature, which sounds like it's pretty all-encompassing around nature here.
It's definitely not a snappy title, but it's kind of representative of the fact that the book is so packed with stories of all sorts of different wild creatures, wild plants, stories from nature in Ireland across time as well.
How did frogs and newts make the title then?
Well, frogs have always been my kind of favourite little creature. I'm particularly keen on frogs, and it starts with a story on frogs. So the illustrator picked up on that. And then I was in frogs, I talk about how they have intergenerational roots to their mating ponds. They follow the same roots for like decades. And then I rhymed it with the polka dot newts. Now, that's not the name of the species. They're called smooth newts. But in spring at the mating season, the males get this amazing polka dot skin. So this is very attractive to the females. And I kind of thought that was a fun little play on words to frog roots and polka dot newts is the title.
It 100% works. When you're picking an illustrator for a book like this, is that a difficult process to do, or is this someone you'd worked with before?
Jane Carkill is a wonderful Irish illustrator based in the Burren in County Clare. And she also did the illustrations for my last book, which is called Wild Embrace. So a very obvious choice to ask Jane to do it again. And she's really wonderful.
And from a beautiful part of the country as well. So you grew up within nature. I was reading kind of the Wicklow Mountains. That was home for you. And that was a wonderful place maybe to get an appreciation for nature, animals, insects, everything around us.
Yeah, I grew up kind of, I would say, feral in the Wicklow Mountains, like a lot of kids would have, you know, of my generation. You were just let off out. And I have really strong memories of finding birds' nests up in the hedgerows and clambering in through trees, climbing trees, going in under the hedges and being surrounded by primroses, playing down by the lake. And a lot of children do have these experiences. I think that the difference with me and others like me who become ecologists who go on to study this is that we don't lose that. And often it's kind of drummed out of us as teenagers. We become, you know, it becomes very uncool or it's seen as childish to retain that love of nature into adulthood. And I think that's really part of the problem of what's gone so wrong with society of late. You know, we don't respect those connections anymore, when actually we have an innate propensity to connect, to seek connections with wild species, with those animals that live around us. And we're quite detached from that now as a society. So I guess this book and the writing all of these stories over the years for Nature File has been my way of trying to open people's eyes to the amazing things that are going on. There's creatures that have the most incredible life strategies. I mean, if there's a way of living that you could possibly imagine, it's out there. There's some creature doing it.
Was that part of the drive here? Because there is kind of that feeling sometimes that maybe this idea of becoming at one with nature, having a love for nature, is almost like a hippie thing, or it's a retreat as opposed to maybe something that everyone can think about?
Absolutely. Like, because I've been studying environmental science and ecology since, you know, my late teens and working in this since my 20s. And I used to hate being called either a tree hugger or an eco warrior, because it feels quite kind of derogatory, you know?
I would say it's never used in a positive sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is kind of my way of inviting people to reconnect, to enjoy the stories. To, like, a lot of people now would, they might know an oak tree and an ash tree, but that's about it. There's so many other native tree species, and each has an amazing strategy, an amazing way of, you know, collaborating. So now, at the moment, all the hazelnuts and all the acorns are ripening on the trees around us. And this is the time when the jays, which is a kind of a bird, a kind of a colourful crow, jays and squirrels are caching up those hazelnuts and those acorns. And some of the cached ones don't get recovered. And that's how the trees, you know, collaborate with these wild creatures to spread their kind far and wide.
I love the colour at this time of year. I know people kind of associate spring with life kind of coming back out of the winter, but I do kind of like those autumnal colours that happen around now.
I just love the month of October. I was out this morning for a gorgeous walk, and the oranges and the russet reds, they're just starting to creep in. It's just the beginning, and I know in another few weeks things are going to be really lively. And that's not just the tree colours, but out in the hills as well. We've got the heathers are all in flower still through October, so you've got this gorgeous purple hue across the uplands, and many of us love getting out in October into the hills for our hikes and our walks.
Yeah, and look, it's still warm enough and the weather is still good enough to be able to get out into the open as well. We want to have a look at some of the things you've picked out for October. We said we'd focus on this month because, you know, a couple of days in, why not start with it? And the one we want to start with was the Brent geese, which really this is kind of looking at around the area in County Down, around Strangford Loch, that type of area. But they go away and then they come back.
That's right. Brent geese are one of the species, one of the birds that nest up in the Arctic Circle in Arctic Canada. And then 90% of the global population of Brent geese come to Ireland for the winter.
Nice.
But they don't just kind of arrive anywhere. For some reason, they all gather in Strangford Loch first. There's a lot of eelgrass there. They're so good at navigating. I mean, it's precision navigation for them to fly all the way here, including this year's young. So those geese born during the summer have already, you know, become strong enough and able to find their way here. Now, they travel in family groups, but they all land in at Strangford Loch in October. And then across the winter months, they'll disperse to other estuaries and mud flats around the coast.
Isn't it incredible that they find that as their kind of, I guess, their launching pad for their winter, that they will always come back to the same place?
It is amazing. Yeah, they're a large bird. Mm. They're totally vegetarian. They feed on eelgrass mostly, and the samphire as well, these succulent coastal plants. So there's obviously good feeding grounds there. Mm. And they can disperse from there. And one of the things also that I love about the winter months that we're inviting in now is sometimes you can hear the geese honking from overhead. I remember making a point about 10 years ago. Whenever I hear that, put down what you're doing, walk outside and look up. Just take that little pause to appreciate how far these birds have come and how they spend the winter here. It's quite amazing.
Mm. I was going through the Phoenix Park recently and the deer were out all over the place and we had stopped to let them cross across. And they, it's amazing again how much the deer around there are actually happy enough with humans around. I guess they've got conditioned to the fact that humans are always walking through the park. And now at this stage, we want to have a chat about the red deer, and you've gone with red deer rutting.
Yes, because October is rutting season. So it's when the males, the levels of testosterone go up, their necks double in size, and they start vying with each other, the different males, to have control of their harem of females. So it'll tend to be the biggest and the strongest male will win out. Now, it's not just based on like the antlers. It's also they have this deep rumble of a roar that you can sometimes hear if you're out hiking in the hills during October. Mm. And that's what intimidates the other males away. And the winner gets access to the whole harem of females. So that's something worth kind of looking out for in October. Also steering well clear of deer if you're out walking in October.
Yeah, like if the alpha male establishes themselves, do the rest of the deer just kind of back off at that point?
They do. Right. Now, that's the set way that things work. But now, since we can do genetic studies, we can get a lot more insight into the detail of what really goes on. And we are discovering that it's not just that male. So all the offspring next spring aren't just from the alpha male, which means that the other males, often the younger males, are skirting around the edges. And if some of the females in the harem decide to wander off at any point, they mate with the other males as well.
it's like nightclubs, the way they're actually working this out. Millipedes have won October's award for what you've called the outstanding ecological importance that they bring.
Yeah, millipedes. I mean, we all know millipedes, the little things that curl up into a little ball when you poke at them. We know them as kids. We've all poked at millipedes.
I've turned over a piece of wood and found them there. And yeah. I've never thought about their importance to ecology, though.
Yeah, so millipedes break down leaf litter. So as we were talking, all these beautiful autumn leaves, they fall off the trees, obviously. And the reason why they're not still in mounds along our parks and our fields and our hedgerows come next spring is because decomposers like millipedes break down that leaf litter. So that's why they have such an ecological importance, because it's not just removing the leaves. They recycle all of the nutrients from those leaves back into the soil. And that's what makes the soil rich again, so that all of the spring plants can grow next year. So they have a really important ecological role. And that's, I mean, that's the case with every invertebrate and every animal. And we tend to overlook that, really.
I think sometimes we kind of assume that once the leaves hit the ground, they just decompose and become part of the system. We don't think about these catalysts and facilitators that actually make it happen.
Yeah, they don't do it on their own. And there's a whole host of different organisms that break down autumn leaves and recycle them. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, in let's say in our parks and our gardens, we're quite attached to tidiness.
Right.
We like things looking neat and orderly. And really, we need to surrender that controlling tendency and leave those swathes of leaves, because that's where all the millipedes and the wood lice and the worms are all busily breaking down those leaves. And of course, they're the things, those invertebrates, that are the food for all of the birds when they come nesting next spring. So everything is really interdependent. And when we, you know, interfere so much and sweep away things, whether it's mowing the lawns too much in the springtime or clearing away the leaves in October, there's a lot of, like, moths. We have 1,400 different species of moth native in Ireland. And a lot of those would overwinter either in the, you know, in the nooks and crannies of the bark of a tree or in the piles of leaf litter.
Before we finish, if I can ask you about hedgehogs, because my dog back home has become obsessed with some hedgehogs that are at the back of our garden and is trying to keep them away because of the massive risk that if at some point they were decide to put their pricks out and next thing he ends up having them pulled out of his nose. Thankfully, I think he's just more intrigued rather than wanting to go in to unsettle where they are. But we've hedgerows at the back and they have just found, I think, what is going to be their autumn and winter home now at this stage. So you've been writing about the easy laid back lifestyle of the hedgehog.
That's right, because hedgehogs now during October, I mean, most of us would know that hedgehogs go into hibernation in winter, but in October they're preparing for the hibernation. So in the same way we'd all be familiar that birds in spring gather up leaves and dry grass and moss to make their nest, hedgehogs are doing pretty much the same thing now. They're preparing all of those bits of moss and leaves to make a nice cosy hibernaculum for themselves. And then they'll go into that at the end of October and they'll stay there for the whole of the winter. Their heart rate lowers, their temperature goes down. They can survive the whole of the winter without any food. So yeah, hedgehogs are preparing for winter now. Hedgehogs, interestingly, aren't a native species.
Right. Who brought them here?
For a long time, we thought that they came in with the Normans. We know that they came in around the 1300s, but there's a newer thinking now that they were actually brought in by monks who were setting up abbeys in Ireland in the 11 and 1200s. And because hedgehogs love eating slugs and snails, and these abbeys had these wonderful gardens, vegetable gardens, bringing in hedgehogs was a really good way to help control those slugs and snails. And it still is. So that's probably how hedgehogs came to become established in Ireland.
They've flourished in the nearly 1,000 years since. So the book is Frog Roots, Polka Dot Newts and Other Treasures of Irish Nature.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.